This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Joining us here at the top of the hour, Pack, is one of our favorites, noted football writer, scribe, if you will, live from the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and now part of On3.com. Please welcome back to Packer and Durham, Ivan Maisel. Mr. Maisel, good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I really regret I'm not at home, because when you had me on last year, I was able to show you dogs, and this year I didn't bring them to Dallas with me. So you got to have me back on. You can see how much the dogs have grown.
Well, I mean, that's they are an important component of the success of this show. So Ivan, that has been noted, and the next go around we'll get you from home. But the fact that you're down there in Dallas, there is so much to address here in terms of the world of college football. We have had some off seasons, but this one I think has been unlike anyone ever in the history of the sport, giving what's going on with the NCAA, the potential of the college football playoff, name, image, and likeness. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And everybody always wonders about, I mean, what do you guys always talk about in May, June, and July? That has not been an issue in 21.
No, you know, Pack, I really don't want to bring this back to me, but the short story, I'm trying to figure out after ESPN let me go what I'm going to do. And I thought, should I just write books and play golf? And I can tell you, one of those I don't do very well. But I couldn't do it because everything's changed. And I thought, you know, if I don't go back and cover it now, I'm always going to be in the before times. And, you know, I wanted to be in the after times, too. I want to see what's going to happen.
Ivan, if you had to take name, image, and likeness, college football playoff expansion proposal, I want to make sure I get all that right, the front end of conference realignment for the third time in the last 21 years, how do you rank them?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I think the playoff proposal is probably the bronze medalist there, because it's now on hold and we don't know what's going to happen. Name, image, and likeness is, I think, pretty important just because of what it signals. I mean, it signals there is a shift in how we regard student athletes as an industry, mm-hmm. as a sport. For the first time, you know, it's been predicted it was going to come, but it's finally here. Having said that, I think the move of Texas and OU to the SEC is the biggest because of what it signals is coming down the pike. I mean, we've always heard that, you know, we really don't have a level playing field, and that's what the NCAA is trying to do, is make the field as level as possible. Well, Texas and OU leaving, to me, is the last piece of, you know, let's forget the level playing field. Hmm. You know, and Alabama is never going to be on the same level as Bowling Green, and who are we kidding? The fact that Texas and OU, you know, who are two very big brands, didn't feel comfortable about their future where they were and felt the need to go somewhere else to secure their future, you know, if that's how dicey it is, you know, for the whole Big 12 and everything writ large, then we really are going to see some major changes. I mean, to me, it's almost as if you got a power two in the SEC and the Big Ten, and the ACC has kind of got one foot on each side of the line, and the Pac-12's got a lot of catching up to do, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen to the Big 12.
Ivan, as far as the ACC goes, and Wes and I have kicked it around like everybody else has, it seems on the surface that the answer to any expansion question really involves one team, and that's Notre Dame. Could you make a case, though, for others from an ACC perspective?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's available or anybody. You know, it's hard to imagine.
Answer it however you want.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine anybody in the SEC would would skip over. I mean, you know, historically people always thought Kentucky's got more of an ACC profile, but you know, now that Jim Phillips has declared football as the number one priority of the ACC, then Kentucky, you know, the basketball school maybe ought to stay where it is. I mean, nobody leaps to mind. Are you going to, you know, what are you going to poach Maryland back from the Big Ten? There's nobody out there that's obvious. They've had a chance to get West Virginia in the past and have let it go. Has something changed in Morgantown that would make them more appealing? If it has, I don't know it. I just don't see anybody out there that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Notre Dame, you know, they got their 1 year trial last year and they said they had a great time, said thanks. And, you know, we're not going to buy the vacation home. They got a free stay.
Here's the interesting part about all this. It seems to be predicated on things, Ivan, that the last conference realignments, and I'm talking about the one early 2000 and the one 10 years ago, all of this now going forward doesn't seem to be predicated on what we traditionally thought realignment was built on. This seems to be built on the business aspect of this. And, you know, look, the three of us have been in this long enough. We know this has been about dollars and cents and not homecoming dances and, you know, letter jackets, right? We got all that.
Right.
But yeah. this is turning all the cards over post-pandemic, if you will, to show the general public, hey, you know, we've been talking about some of this stuff. Well, really, we've kind of been in business here. And it seems like now all this is about the business side of college athletics.
Well, sure. And you know, in the past realignments were about the business side in the sense that this is how we can maximize our cable money, you know, by making our footprint bigger. You know, oddly enough, 2 days before his house blew up, Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, said that he thought the cable alignment era was over because cable is slowly dying. I asked Sankey about that, and he, you know, he didn't really subscribe to that thought. And then he blew up the Big 12. But anyway, you know, I think Texas, you know, just to go by what Jay Hartzell said, the president of UT, said before the state senate this week, you know, they looked at the numbers and they didn't like what they saw in the Big 12, and you know, they went to the SEC. And you can, you know, you can blame Greg Sankey all you want, but I promise you, you know, the other three commissioners, if Texas and OU had come to them and said, are you interested? They would have said, sure we are. So it just, you know, it made sense for both sides.
Ivan, do you get a sense with all of this that at the end of the day, the SEC has obviously positioned themselves in a great spot? You mentioned the Big Ten. They're printing more money than anybody. They're in a good spot. It's not that the ACC is going broke and the Pac-12. They're all making a ton of cash. But at the end of the day, forget expansion a second. You know, and we're sitting here in our ACC footprint. At the end of the day, Clemson's playing lights out. Program's in a great spot. But they need help, right? They need Miami. They need Virginia Tech. They need North Carolina. They need Florida State. You know, those teams have to be good for your league. And when people can talk about revenue and all that stuff, the only way that gets changed is if your teams are really good. The Pac-12, you know what, as irrelevant as they have been as far as the college football playoff goes, much less March Madness, you know what, they're still made over $500 million. They split up. You know what? But they need SC and Oregon and Washington to be really, really good, top 10, top 15. The Big Ten is all the money that they're printing up. Ohio State is out of sight, dominant. But you know what? What their league really needs is Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska, Wisconsin to be really, really good. You know, at the end of the day, if you really want to position yourself in a position of strength, your teams have to be good. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's got to be, period.
Well, you're right. And that's why I was so struck by what Jim Phillips said in Charlotte last week, or 2 weeks ago. I mean, you know, to come out and declare as conference policy that football is our number one priority. I mean, that's a shift for the ACC. It's been de facto that way, really, for 30 years since they went and got Florida State. But to come out and say this is our priority, there's a lot of work to be done. And not that the North Carolinas and Virginia Techs aren't, you know, relatively close to being national contenders. North Carolina's going to start out in the top 10. But, what all those schools that we all think of as the blue bloods of college football, it's important to them, and it's always been important to them. And to get that mindset and develop that mindset takes time, takes tradition. And, it's a big ask of these schools to catch up to the Ohio States and Alabamas of the world.
Yeah. Hey, I know you're excited about on3.com, and you guys are off to a good start, and you got a story up there now online along with several others. But we were talking about this in Charlotte. You got a personal project comes out in the fall, a book that I'm excited to see. I keep trying to catch his eye. Tell folks about it, because it is, I got to believe, an emotional story for you and all the things you and your family have been through in the last couple of years.
Well, thank you, Wes, for asking. It's a book about our late son, Max, who died in February 2015. He was a junior in college. He ended his life. He was struggling, and we didn't understand the degree to which he was struggling. And I didn't want him to be defined by how he died. I wanted to tell people who he was, explain my very interesting father-son relationship with him, and describe what happened to us. And how we learn to carry our grief. You never lose it. It's always with you, but you have to keep functioning. And I thought, if I can explain what we have endured over the last 6 years and how we found a path back to living a life that it still has joy in it, then maybe it will help people. It's never the same, and there's always a part of you that's sad, but you got to keep going. And I'm hoping it'll help somebody. It helped me. So the pub date's October 26th, and you can pre-order it. And I hope you do.
Thanks. That's
awesome. It'll be great. We appreciate the time as always. Stay safe out there in Dallas, traveling around and everything else. But man, we are living in fascinating times.
My mask.
There you go.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah.
I highly suggest you wear it after what I've been through the last 2-3 weeks. It is no joke. You do not want to get your hands on it. I promise you.
No.
Hey, see you on the road, man. You bet. Ivan Maizel, on3.com. Appreciate it as always, my man. Great to see you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
No matter where you look on campus at NC State, you'll see red bricks, the literal building blocks, stepping stones, and heart of the university. They form the historic buildings and pathways that crisscross campus, and over 500,000 alone lay right here at the Brickyard. They're even under the paint and art of the Free Expression Tunnel. And on September 2nd, you'll also see red bricks on the football field on these special helmets for the pack. What's better than that and a slobbering wolf to pack a punch in week 1?
You like the
helmet? Slobbering wolf.
You like the helmet?
Okay.
You like that?
The red and white of NC State. There's the old slobbering wolf. Give me some Stan Fritz. Give me the Bucky twins. Come on now.
Give me Tuffy on set for Packer and Durham.
Gosh. Oh, my heavens.
I want the wolf pup. I do. I want the wolf pup on set. I know you're a cat guy. You're going to have to start dealing with coming back here in the basement and hanging out with Chester and Fuller. But when we take this show on the road, when we get a chance to do our road trip, which is September 2nd in Raleigh, and we're live from Carter Finley, I'm assuming that's where we're going to be situated. I'm looking for the pup. Yeah, I want the wolf pup. Tough.
Okay.
That's what I want.
All right. There you go. Let's go to Raleigh. Luke DeCock from the pages of the Raleigh News and Observer. Welcome, sir. Good to see you. Oh, look at this. We got a little bit more of a decor behind us now, Pac. Not just a bookshelf, a white brick wall.
But we just talked about the red bricks of NC State, and DeCock comes up here. He's got the white bricks behind him. So we got to get that straightened out one way or the other.
Yeah. How are we doing there?
We went mod today. This is very mid-century modern. I'm good. You guys are welcome to do the show from here on September 2nd. I have dogs. They're not toughy, but we have dogs for you. So you'll feel right at home.
All right. I like the sound of that already. But we are looking for the wolf pup, though. I want to see Tuffy up close. That was a sweet – when I saw the video, I was like, Tuffy 3, I like it. The big ears, big paws, good attitude. Slobbering wolf, everything about it. But, hey, Luke, NC State football, there's always expectations in Raleigh, but it does feel a little different this year in terms of the foundation coming off a solid year, everybody coming back and their brother. Things seem to be really, really comfortable and good in Raleigh here in early August.
Yeah, the problem is historically for NC State, that's when everything goes haywire. But, no, there's no question that – this sets up well for NC State. You're looking at 20 returning starters. You've got a quarterback who I wouldn't say is experienced, but certainly has some experience before getting injured. And, you know, you've got a team that performed well last year without having to be in the Atlantic Division and gets Clemson early. Let's face it. If you're in the Atlantic Division, the litmus test, the big question is always, you know, is this the year? Can you beat Clemson? NC State certainly has some advantages this year, or at least, you know, some attributes that should help it. But it also gets Clemson early. And I think that, you know, for a team that returns 20 starters, playing a team that certainly has a talent advantage, but also is breaking in some new skill players, you know, you'd rather see them early than in November. I think that plays in NC State's advantage. But the other thing that NC State football has going for it, which is harder to put on paper or, you know, less tangible, is I've been really impressed with the level of leadership within that program. I mean, guys like Isaiah Moore, Grant Gibson, these are guys who have that, you know, very difficult to define, but sort of that emotional intelligence. You know, players have talent and they have speed, they have strength, hand-eye coordination. These are guys who have that innate ability to connect with people, to lead. You've seen it off the field with some of the things they've done. You know, that I think for a team that has this much experience, this much talent, you know, a lot of times that missing piece can be sort of that leadership, and they have it with those guys.
Luke, here's the silver lining to 2020 for Dave Doran has to be a couple things. Number one, somewhere along the way, they got competitive depth developed, right? I mean, they got a lot of guys. They've got some backups. They've, you know, because things got left-handed at times with the COVID and things like that, injuries set in a little bit. Devin Leary obviously being part of that. They had to kind of, by hook or crook, develop guys and have them ready to go. Second thing is this, though, and this is one of the things I'm not sure that we can say they've started a season with a ton of, but I got the sense 2 weeks ago in Charlotte, there's a lot of confidence with NC State. Last year, they built a lot of strong mentality to go get the job done. Is that real from your perspective?
I mean, I think it's real. I don't know that we'll be able to, you know, point to the whatever effect it has. But you got to remember, this was a team that had almost no training camp last year because of COVID. Had players held out for the starter, because they hadn't practiced enough because of COVID. So it was a team and then lost its quarterback. This was a team that endured real adversity, had to put players in positions where they weren't ready. In some cases, it was entirely self-inflicted, like all the targeting calls in the secondary and Chris Ingram in particular. You know, they had to break in some defensive backs they weren't expecting to play because of suspension. So, you know, it was a trial by fire for a lot of these guys. And two things happened. One, they played. And two, NC State won some football games. I mean, 8-4 is nothing to sneeze at. There's a confidence there because they, I think, can't imagine it being any worse. But there's also a big gap between feeling that way in July and getting to that in September and October. And it will take positive reinforcement on the field, starting with South Florida, to turn that confidence, which I feel and see too, into results. But it's there. You know, what effect it has, we'll find out. But it is different for NC State to go into the season feeling like it's ahead of the curve. You know, we'll find out how that plays to the Wolfpack's advantage.
Luke, I'm curious to get your take from a scheduling perspective. You know, we're all going to be in Raleigh for the opener on that Thursday, September 2nd. But week two, to me, is a critical week for NC State. And when you go on the road at Mississippi State, SEC venue, all that stuff, to me, that's where you really kind of find out who you are. You know, everybody's good at home for the most part. And with all the hype, what's going on with North Carolina, NC State's kind of flying underneath the radar. And I think they're probably really comfortable with that. Plus, it gives them a chip on the shoulder. But to be able to go on the road and beat a Power 5 opponent, somebody from the SEC, in an environment like that, I really just think that's such a critical game for NC State emotionally, mentally, physically, and also setting up the rest of their year.
100%. And let's not forget, it's not something they've done a lot of under Dave Doran. You know, you've got to get some big non-conference wins. You know, Mississippi State may or may not, you know, we'll find out what kind of team they have. But to go on the road to an SEC venue week two, that's a huge test for a team that, you know, is still, despite all the returning players, going to be figuring out what it is and what it has and its personality. And then, you know, you go right from there. You get the 1 week against Furman and right from there into Clemson. So we will know by the end of September, you know, what NC State's prospects are, what kind of team this is, what kind of season it's going to be. There's not going to be any mystery with this group. You're not going to be wondering, you know, what is NC State going to look like? It's all going to be right there and right there early. And even the South Florida game. This is a team that now has some expectations. It now has, you know, people expecting it to win. And it's going to be expected to win against South Florida at Carter-Finley. So that's a test, too, a different kind of test. But that's a test, too, in terms of how do you handle expectations? How do you handle being the favorite? And then Mississippi State, how do you handle a hostile environment? How do you deal with that? You know, how do you deal with the whole environment of an SEC game? I mean, they may end up in a, you know, a situation where people are pulling fire alarms at their hotel in Starkville. It's you know, that comes with the territory. That's something this team is going to have to deal with.
Hey, Luke, I want to give Dave Doran a lot of credit here for the long game, right? Because it was pretty rocky and choppy at the beginning. And a couple of years ago, it was still a little bumpy. But, boy, you give the guy credit for just the way he's handled the long game here and building this back patiently. And at times, I know the Wolfpack fan base might have been frustrated. But they look close, man, and I think this guy deserves a lot of credit for it.
You know, I mean, there have been some fits and starts, and even with his staff, there have been a lot of changes. I think a couple of things that have happened in the last couple of years have sort of helped stabilize the program. I mean, you know, some of the turnover coordinator, I think he's got the right guys in those positions now, guys that, you know, the players seem to respond to and seem to work together well. I don't want to underestimate this because it's hard to put a finger on the value of this, but I also don't want to overestimate it because we often put too much value on it. But bringing in Ruffin McNeil as a sort of consigliere, you know, I think that's had an effect too. Having that voice with him, who's been there, who's been through the wars, who's been fired, you know, it's a guy who's respected in the state, a guy who's respected by other coaches. I think having that voice there has helped, too. Having just a sounding board, someone who's been through it. I think all of those things together have sort of contributed to this, you know, I don't want to call it a second wind, but they've recovered from some bad stuff and are now building towards something in recruiting, in the style of play. There's a personality there now on both sides of the ball. You know, all of that has been very intentional, and it's put the team in this position this fall.
Luke, totally separate issue. Your take on what the ACC and expansion or lack thereof could potentially look like here down the road.
You know, I wrote this last week or a couple weeks ago that to me, the ACC's best move is to do nothing right now. If I'm looking at how the key here being, how do we reopen the deal with ESPN? Hello, everybody. You know, what moves that needle? Does West Virginia move that needle? I don't think so. You know, Notre Dame is the answer. You know, what can you do to bring Notre Dame in the fold? Was last year a missed opportunity to really apply pressure to do that? To me, that's the key. That's the great golden goose out there. And it doesn't have to happen right now with the grant of rights. You know, everybody's locked up through 2036. That was, you know, I was joking, the guy who posted that rumor about Clemson and Florida State and the SEC, like, you don't understand how the grant of rights works. That would be like a $500 million fishing expedition. It was like the guy who, when Zion got hurt, wrote that ACC tournament officials were liquidating tickets because Zion wasn't going to play. It's just, you know, I mean, there are certain things that you need to understand how they work, and that ain't it.
You're right. 100% right.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. All right. Be well. Appreciate the time as always. Hey, Packer is serious about this Tuffy deal on September 2nd and getting him on the set. Do you like his chances, Luke? I mean, what do you think? I mean, it does, and you know.
Yeah. No, I think if you put the request in ahead of time, why not? It's a show that has dogs.
Right.
That's, you know, that's in the brand. Right.
No doubt.
You know, he's a pup. He's a little bit of a puppy. That might be interesting. But, you know, no, go for it. Pack, it's good to have you back, buddy.
Well, it's good to be back. And by the way, who is in charge of Tuffy?
Oh,
do we know the answer to that?
No. Here we go.
You know everything about NC State. I mean, do we have an official handler of Tuffy?
I will put you in touch with the handler, Mark.
Okay. Because I am dead serious about this. If we're going to go live from Raleigh on game day, I want the official Wolf Pup on the set. He can sit right there with me. I'll bring treats.
Would you settle for Mr. and Mrs. Wolf on your lap?
No disrespect. No disrespect to the mascots. And I am pro mascot, but I love live animals. So if I have a chance from a pecking order perspective, I mean, if you know, Mr. and Mrs. Wolf want to hang out with Wes, that's fine on the other side of the desk. But I want the Wolf Pup. I want Tuffy, the big ears, big paws, good attitude, puppy breath, the whole deal. I want him on the set with us. So that's, I'm just throwing that out.
I will do what I can to make it happen.
Can I interject here that I've actually had my picture made with Mr. and Mrs. Wolf?
That's fine. I got no problem. I got no issues with it. I don't want the mascots with an attitude. They're the worst. Mascots with attitudes are the worst.
You guys need to reenact the Demon Deacon marrying Mr. and Mrs. Wolf on the show at some point. Like, renew their vows.
That was classic.
I think that's very important.
Do you know, as you know, Luke, there is a picture of that taking place at Reynolds Coliseum from back in the day.
That was great.
Yeah, one of Frank Whedon's great ideas. marry him off and let the Demon Deacon do it.
And with Whedon in charge, there was absolutely no chance North Carolina was going to be involved in any of that process license it or whatever the case may be. Luke, be well. Always good to see you. Hopefully we'll see you on the 2nd of September with Tuffy, or apparently there's going to be trouble.
Could be a problem.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I'll get to work.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Many thanks to Ivan Maisel. You just heard from Luke DeCock talking to NC State football. Pack's fired up. Should be. Can't wait for us to be there on Thursday, September 2nd. West Durham, Mark Packer, Tuffy, the whole crew. We'll be there. We'll be rocking and rolling, having a good time with that. Looking forward to it.
With Tuffy. We'll be there.
I want Tuffy on the set.
I want
the pup with me. You don't have to deal with it. Listen, I know you're a cat guy. Well, I'll keep the pup away from you, but me and the hounds are going to get together now.
Yeah,
we're taking this show on the road. I want Tuffy with us.
I know.
Game day.
I know. All right, let's get back to these quarterbacks. Remember now, we said in the first hour, the depth of the quarterback position in the ACC is second to none nationally among any other Power 5 conference and really probably any conference in college football. But what does it take individually when these guys are going to have their best years yet? Is it in the cards for them? Well, let's get down to these last three. We talked about little nuances at each of the schools earlier. There's some even with these final three. I thought what Brennan Armstrong did a year ago when he came on the scene, Pack, was impressive at the University of Virginia. You know, Bryce Perkins, there was kind of that gap in between. We saw Lindell Stone at times a couple of years ago. But what Brennan Armstrong did, 2,100 yards. You see the 18 touchdowns, five more on the ground. And I thought Robert and I did a really good job of getting Armstrong to a place where he was comfortable and where Virginia was comfortable with him.
And watching him develop last year, Wes, it was kind of fun to watch because I just wasn't sure what Virginia was going to look like at quarterback when you lose such a dynamic player like you mentioned in Perkins. And I remember when we had Bronco Mendenhall on the show last summer, and we talked about, boy, you're going to lose a lot of production at quarterback. And he was completely comfortable and confident with his quarterback room. And, of course, he sees these guys every day, and if your head coach doesn't know, then you got a real problem. But I think Bronco understood that, hey, you know what, we got some guys who can play. And to watch Armstrong develop as the year goes on and just see his toughness, and I thought he got better as the year went on. So I think if you're a Virginia football fan, you're totally confident and comfortable with who you've got under center. And, again, all these guys that we've rattled through with quarterback play, I expect every one of them to have a better 21 than they did in 20.
Here's the interesting part about Brennan Armstrong. I don't think you can discount the 7 games he played in 2019, okay? Granted, he did it and he threw for under 200 yards and a touchdown, but he threw and hit 75% of his passes, okay? I mean, you hit 75% of your passes. I don't care if you hit 200 yards or not. You show me a completion percentage. Last year, he was under 60. I think that's where the growth plate is for Virginia this year. Armstrong gets off to a good start, Pack, and they can run the ball a little bit. I think Cavaliers could be an issue here. Now, the offensive line, that's an area, again, we've talked about it with several schools. Virginia's got to feel good about where they are in that particular area. And if they are, Armstrong could have a very big year, and thus the Cavaliers. The other thing, too, without Lavelle Davis on the perimeter, I think Billy Kemp is set to return to prominence in that offense, too.
Agreed.
And he is a major problem for defenses.
Yep, 100% agree. And I think Virginia is also comfortable not in the spotlight. You know, and there was a lot of pressure on them a couple of years ago. Hey, this is the year for the Hoos. And they stood up and took care of business. They always had issues trying to win games on the road. I think they are totally comfortable with the fact that everybody's talking about North Carolina and Miami as the teams to beat. And I think they like that position. I do. They're just, they've got to start to figure out, though, how do you win on the road? It's the only way to get back into a prominent role that, hey, we're going to go win the division, go play for a championship. You've got to be able to win on the road. Virginia's been fine in Charlottesville. But being able to take it on the road, that's why I mentioned to you yesterday, I thought that most important game for them was at North Carolina in September. That's the team that everybody's talking about. You got to go beat them, and you got to go do it away from Charlottesville.
There you go. Let's go to De'Eric King here. And, again, we're talking about a guy who's getting ready to play his sixth year of football. Remember now, a year ago at Miami, those numbers are impressive. And then, by the way, throw in the other touchdowns. 64%. I mean, he hit 64-7 at Miami, or 64-7 in 2017 at Houston, 66-7 in 2016, but only 9 games and 20 passing yards that year. You're talking about a guy who's had now 2 years of over 2,600 yards. And I think, Pack, I don't see any reason he can't recreate the 18 run at Houston.
Well, great athlete, experienced, understands the game. It slows down now for him. There are weapons at Miami. What is there not to like? And you hope he's going to be 100%, and it sounds like he is good to go for the opener against the Tide. Mm-hmm. This is a dynamic playmaker, one of the best in the country, and Miami is fortunate to have him.
Yep. I mean, De'Eric King's in a spot where, look, he gets quite a stage to start the year.
Oh.
And it's, I mean, it is a big opportunity for him and his football team.
Yep.
On opening night. So we'll see what happens there. How about Sam Howell? I mean, here's the guy, what do you want to say, Pac? 68 throws in 2 years? It's crazy. Last year's bananas.
Total package. It's got every throw. Question to courses. You got a great offensive line in front of you. Everybody is back. You did lose some weapons in the backfield, but I don't think Mac Brown will have that figured out. The guys had a chance in the Orange Bowl to step up and fill in some spots, kind of see what it like to play in a big-time environment. Sam Howell's the whole package. He's a guy that could certainly win the Heisman Trophy, ACC Preseason Player of the Year. All the hype, everything you want is sitting right there at number 7. in baby blue. And Mack Brown and company, this could be the year that the Tar Heels finally snap their ACC football championship streak. And a lot of folks believe they got a chance. So we'll see how this plays out. But he is the real deal. He can
so
really
play. What's your concern with these last two guys? Is it King's return to 100%? Is there a concern?
I mean, health.
Either where?
Well, health is obviously priority one. I'm going to have this conversation based on the fact that I think everybody's going to be healthy and stay relatively healthy. I have no issues with it. The last three guys that we rattled off, I think all three of them are going to have great years. And the league has such tremendous quality depth in the quarterback position. It's got star power at the very top, and you can go to the middle, you can go to the bottom, and you've got dudes who can play. And I think that if you're an ACC football fan, you know about Clemson, they're great. You know about the hype with Miami's and the North Carolinas and NC States who have the chance to have breakthrough awesome years. But I just think the quality of play at quarterback gives everybody reason to be optimistic in August and early September when we get the season started. The league, from a depth standpoint, has never been in a better spot from a quarterback standpoint. And if you don't have a quarterback, you have no chance to win in college football.
Yeah.
Zero.
I know the folks in Central New York say, well, wait a second, Tommy DeVito. Yeah, we know Tommy DeVito and Garrett Schrader, though, based on everything Dino Babers said to us in Charlotte a couple weeks ago with Jordan and the guys on the set, that's a battle. That's a competition to see who takes the opening snap at Ohio in week one. So, yeah, we could show Tommy DeVito's numbers, but he's not the clear-cut answer at starter, at least from what we understand. Second thing is Gunnar Holmberg looked good in the spring, but he does not have a start yet. So those are the two schools where there are questions. Everybody else has got somebody proven at that position. I'm as interested to see who takes the opening snap for Syracuse and how Holmberg looks on opening night against the 49ers of Will Healy and Charlotte, too. Because those are big opportunities for both those schools to kind of turn the worm a little bit from what they went through a year ago.
Yeah, so, not gonna say it's a must win for those two in that particular case, but you better win those games, right?
Yeah.
I mean, big picture. I mean, because for both Syracuse and Duke, it's going to be an uphill battle in 21. And when you've got those chances, those games, you go, well, we're better than them. You better win those games. And that includes, I mentioned, that's why I thought Syracuse's opener at Ohio is about as critical as it gets as far as you pick a team in the league. They need to win that game. And if you're Duke, I mentioned first four games are non-conference. I expect them, by the time we get to October, to have at least a couple W's in their back pocket. They expect to beat Charlotte to start the season.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Andy Bitter is going to join us in the Power Hour. Talk a little hokey, hokey, hokey high. Looking forward to that. We'll take phone calls, too, if you're in the mood. 844-SAY-ACCN.
The road trip tonight debuts in Raleigh. A week from tonight, they'll be in Pittsburgh with Pat Narduzzi and the Panthers. We had a chance to catch up with the Pitt head coach yesterday. And I think, like a lot of guys, Narduzzi's just glad to have a normal summer to get to his fall practice.
No question about it. We're excited here in Pittsburgh. Our staff's excited. You know, our kids are excited. We gave them a couple days off, and then we get ready to roll. On Thursday, they report. We go through all the rules that we have kind of in place, and then we crank it up on Friday.
Pat, when you get going here, the value of the experience level you got, I mean, how much does that mean coming off of last year and going back towards normal this year?
You know, I guess it really means absolutely nothing based on where we got ranked, preseason polls in the Coastal, I guess. I don't know. What does it matter? I like our football team. I like our depth. You know, I look around. I talk to our coaches about, how, you know, we got to get guys reps. You know, do we need to go a little bit longer? We got to be very careful with, you know, who's getting the reps and how many reps they are getting, because we've got more depth than we've ever had. And, you know, I think offensively we could be, you know, something to deal with.
Coach, I think that of all the football coaches in the ACC, I think you get more enjoyment out of media rankings than any other coach in the league. It doesn't matter if it's August. It doesn't matter if we're halfway during the year. Because I will hear from you, because I love watching all the press conferences, but I will love all this. Well, you know, we don't get these five stars rolling in here. And I didn't see anybody ranking Pitt in the preseason top 25. And here you are, you know, picking fourth in the division. And we already got a little shot to the media like, all right, there you want to pick us fourth? Cool. You guys pick us fourth. We're going to roll the ball out there and see where this bad boy goes.
Get that chip off our shoulder here in Pittsburgh. That's so. We're ready to go. You know, I love it. I want our kids to know that you know, we didn't get ranked very high, and that's okay. We really never have, and we'll just keep rolling.
I think when I hear Pat Narduzzi, the first thing I think of is defense. Yeah. We're going to swarm you. We're going to get after you. It's going to be aggressive in your face. We're going to be a problem. That's what I think of Pat Narduzzi equals defense, and that's why I think your team is interesting because, and I said this to you the other day, last time we talked, it seems like the defense needs to catch up a little bit with what the offense. You just rattled through all your numbers on the offensive side. And when you've got a veteran quarterback and good backs and tremendous wide receivers and a really good offensive line, I expect this team to score a lot of points, which kind of goes counter to what I think of when I think of Pat Narduzzi football. You guys are going to be wide open and fun and watch. Again, I think if you're a fan, you're going to put your feet up and go, man, this Pitt team, every time they touch the ball, they look like they're going to score. And I know it's August and we haven't gotten to anything yet, but it just seems kind of almost counter to what I'm used to hearing and seeing with Pitt football, that this year offensively, you guys can be incredibly dynamic.
I think we can. And again, you got to go out and do it. You got to make those plays. You got to make the catch. You got to, you know, make somebody miss at tailback, and you got to secure the block up front. So, and again, Pat Narduzzi football is really playing great defense and scored a lot of points on offense. So let's get that categorized right. It's not just about defense. I know defense wins championships, but it's hard to win championships if you don't score points.
All right. Right. So all the things we've talked about, I know we spent some of the spring discussing the various combinations you were going to try and incorporate in the offensive line. How much of that did you get accomplished? How much do you still want to work with that as you get practice underway?
You know, as we get into fall camp, you know, we're going to try to settle in on our five guys and really just let those guys work together for as much of camp as we can. There'll be an injury here and there, and we'll be able to get that sixth guy, you know, working into that spot. But, you know, we want to get those guys working together, communicating together, and make sure that sixth, seventh, eighth guy are getting in there and being able to communicate with the rest of the guys.
Okay,
Pat, we just did a little segment on name, image, and likeness, which is now basically a month old. As a head coach, where are you with that with your team as far as guys cutting deals, your locker room, how you plan to handle that moving forward once you get this camp get starting this week? What's name, image, and likeness been for you and your team?
I don't know what it is, you know. You know, really with our team, you know, guys, it's been great. I mean, you know, our guys are unselfish. You know, they're really not worried about that. They're, you know, worried about, you know, winning a championship, playing football, I think, you know, for the most part. There hasn't been I don't go hang out in the locker room to see what they're talking about down there. But we surely hope that they're really focused on, you know, playing football, you know, getting a degree. Those are the main things. And if you're lucky enough to get some of that, then good for you. And if you're a young guy and you want some of that later on, you know, keep working your tail off and maybe you'll get to it. So to me, it's just a sideshow. There's not a ton of it going on, you know, most places. And, you know, we don't have a $1 million quarterback yet, but, you know, Kenny's doing pretty good. And I think, you know, we'll continue to get better on that front.
By the way, Kenny wanted to make sure that his visit with Kelsey and I in Charlotte counted toward his Packer and Durham credit. Are you?
Do you guys have a contract with him? I haven't heard about that one yet.
No.
Not that I'm aware of, Coach.
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah.
But I would ask you, I saw that Kenny's taken up golf. Heard he's been playing a lot of golf. He talked about golf a little bit with me in Charlotte. Have you and Kenny put a peg in the ground together yet? Because I know you like to get after it a little bit.
I don't like to get after it a little bit. I'm a bad golfer, you know. Kenny's pretty good. He's gone out with my son. My son's luckier than I am. It was funny. We had a text exchange. I was like, hey, this past weekend, my son was out of town. I was like, hey, let's go golf. This is the time. He went home to New Jersey for a couple of days. And he goes, Coach, why don't you, this is, you know, middle of last week. He's like, Coach, why don't you, let's go out like Wednesday or Thursday this week. I said, I have to work. He goes, Coach, you set the schedule. You can just cut off work anytime you want. I'm like, no, I'm not cheating the team. I'm not cheating the team. So it was kind of hilarious. He's like, you set the schedule. You don't have to work.
Yeah. Listen, when the calendar turns to August, all bets are off. That's it is it. Time to get to work. But I know you got to be excited, though. I mean, your fan base, too. This is I think everybody's kind of getting ready to get back into the flow of things, right? We talked about how football really is this country's bread and butter. And we get into a routine as a fan, whether it be a coach, broadcaster, player, whatever the case may be. I think we're all just kind of ready to get back into a routine where, hey, it's game day on Saturday. Let's go tailgate. Let's go to the ball game. Let's go see what's going on. So we're excited. I know you guys are too. And I think you're going to be a fun, fun football team to watch.
I think so too. And, we're fired up. I'm really excited about this team, our kids, our coaches. And, just putting everything together. It's just, compared to last year, guys, this is a whole new year. And again, it makes it even more exciting.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.